Welcome to the Casual Author Podcast. I'm Dan, sci-fi and fantasy author, father of six, full-time worker, homesteader, as well as a man of many other responsibilities. I'm here to bring you inspiration and positivity around having a busy life and wanting to chase that author career, even if you have to take a casual approach. For more information about me, my books, and the podcast, head to dankenner.com/podcast. And here's the show. Hey there, it's Dan Kenner with episode number 113 of the podcast. Today is Monday, April 1st, 2024, as I record this. And today we're talking to Andrew Johnston about bringing your fantasy world into reality. We talk a little bit about his autism and how he incorporates that into his stories, his fantasy stories in really creative ways, and how he brings really fantastical creatures and really in-depth fantasy themes from life into the book so that you feel like you're part of the world. It's a really awesome conversation. He has a lot of awesome insight around being positive and, you know, bringing yourself into the writing. I think you'll want to stick around for that. So I can't believe today is April. It's insane that the first quarter of this year has blown by. But there's a lot of great things in the future, hoping for more accomplishments this year. We'll start with the author updates, because I recently had a little bit of a surge of creativity from a business standpoint. So I had a lot of things, a lot of infrastructure set up for my business partially. And part of the reason I did that was, you know, I got very gung-ho about it, got into it and thought, do I really want to do this? I felt some doubts about it, getting myself out there and trying to make my books a little bit more public and open to everybody. And I recently had the realization that, you know, the time invested in those things, as long as there's not exorbitant costs associated with them, will always be beneficial for me and my business in the future. So decided to just dive into it. On that front, I actually finally got all of the ebooks into my PayHip website. So I have a store, PayHip, that you can buy signed paperbacks of all of my books. And then you can also do print-on-demand shipping through Book Vault to your house. It's a little bit cheaper than Amazon, except for me, the shipping, it comes out a little bit at parity. And then you can also buy ebooks now through my website if you want to buy them directly from myself. So nothing against Amazon or any of those other websites. I will always leave my books on there. But if there's an opportunity for someone to support me directly, buying through my website directly, then I might as well provide that option for them. Took the time to actually get them all updated, organize them into collections, and yeah, you can actually purchase things through them now. Really happy with the process. I do intend on keeping that up to date. I want to put together bundles as well. So you can buy, say, the full Library Chronicles trilogy or the full Kids of Cyber City trilogy signed. So those are things I do need to finish. But at least for now, you can buy all of my books in any format from my website. Now, that is with the exception of Kids of Cyber City. Because that is through a publisher, I only have my stock that I can sign and send to you. I can't do direct to Book Vault sends, because once again, I didn't publish those. I have a publisher called Stag Beetle Books. So that, will I do that again in the future? I don't know. But for now, happy with the way things are set up. I'm also diving back into the Ream subscription that I put together for kind of early access to the books that I'm writing. As you know, I'm writing, working headlong on what's called the Hidden Heritage series. It's a 6-book series of a young adult. It's almost like Percy Jackson and Lorien Legacies type of combination. The kids with the blood of mystical creatures from this fantasy world that have been thrown into our world. It's a little bit of a portal fantasy, but you can get early access to those chapters. The first book is called Dragon Blooded, and then also my epic fantasy novel called The Etcher's Plight. I have it all set up, and I'm just going to start posting the chapters there. So really having a lot of fun with that. If anything, it'll keep me accountable for the writing that I am doing. And yeah, I'll just keep the ball moving forward in terms of the creation process. In other news, I am also going to try my hand at messing with cover design. Now, I don't intend on doing all of my covers. More than likely, I will pay cover designers for my books going forward. But, you know, if there's a way for me to at least put together temporary covers or other images that I can use for promotional content, or at least for my Ream subscription, I might as well take advantage of that. So it's been kind of fun to try to dive into that. I made a kind of snap cover for my short story called Between Life and Death. And it was kind of fun. I sent it to my wife and she said, I mean, it's not terrible. maybe not the greatest in the world, but it looks very comparable to all of those other books you see in the Amazon store. So I thought that was a great compliment, considering my design skills are relatively new. Putting something together like that felt really good. But yeah, I'm really excited to get into the podcast and share my books and share make everything directly accessible to myself. I might as well make it accessible so that people, if they want to support me, can. But other than that, I'm making slow progress on the third book, Dwarf Blooded. I had to take a little bit of a step back to get my chapter prepared for my writer's group this week on the Etcher's Plight. They're about a third of the way through the book now, so it's going to take some time for them to read through the whole thing. Pretty happy with how it's turning out so far. Now, in terms of homestead news, this last weekend, we spent a significant amount of our time on preparing the compost. So one thing that you know if you have a farm or a homestead is the copious amounts of waste, primarily animal waste, that comes from your living animals. So we want to do something with that. It's currently, when we clean out pens and everything, we just kind of pile it up in different places. We historically had tried to do compost piles. The problem with them was they were a little bit too secured. We secured them too well. We couldn't, you're supposed to turn compost regularly. Otherwise, it can't break down and become that really rich, you know, nutritional soil type, you know, compost. And so what happened was just kind of sat there and wasted and wasted. And it's not bad. We can keep using it, but we needed a better system. So my wife saw this system from another homesteading channel on YouTube where you kind of have four bays and they're just sectioned in by T-posts and you pile it up in layers rather than in one big pile. So it makes sure everything is organized. You have to make sure to have a certain amount of green waste and a certain amount of brown waste. We don't have to get into the science of it, but if it's equalized and wet enough, then it will break down. So that's what we worked on this weekend. We got that all prepared. It's right next to our chicken coop intentionally, so that as we're taking stuff out of the chicken coop, we can just put it right there and we don't have to move it. Part of the problem with compost is it just takes a lot of time, and double moving it is silly. You clean everything out into a pile and then you have to move it across your property into the compost pile. Double moving it doesn't make sense. So now it's all close by. And we can just take it directly from cleaning out and put them on the compost pile. Now, hopefully, come this time next year, we will have some really rich compost. We won't have to order it in. Historically, we've had to buy compost and they ship it in these big old trucks and create these big piles that are hard to manage. So, yeah, that was fun. Really enjoyed that part of the compost creation. We haven't started stacking it up quite yet, but we have the infrastructure for it. And then also our cat had kittens, which I don't know if I mentioned that before, but they are adorable. She had originally six. One of them, the runt, died, unfortunately, but five little kittens. They have these orange speckling on them. So the two boys are black and white, which I think is funny. But then there's three girl kittens, and they are all speckled orange and brown, and they're really beautiful looking cats. So yeah, pretty happy with that. She's a great mother. Her and her former son, who also lives with us, another kitten who's almost to adulthood. They kind of co-parent these kittens. It's really weird, but they just kind of like hanging out together and keeping this little pile of kittens warm. It's been fun to watch that. So I need to get a good picture of them so they can share it on social media, because people love cats. I mean, why not? Cats are fun. I believe that's everything in terms of updates this week. A lot of moving parts, just really enjoying everything, trying to continue to have a good attitude and just stay positive about the whole thing. But on that front, we can go ahead and shift over to the interview portion with Andrew. Hey, Andrew, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing very, very well. So looking forward to diving in, talking a little bit more about your world that you've created in your book. But before we dive into that, how long have you been writing and publishing books?
Well, I've been writing for 10 years. I signed with Warrior S Publishing last year in December. Right now, I have a book coming out in April, and I have two more that are going to be coming out across the rest of 2024, and it's all within what's called the Iron Frost universe, and it's basically a series of standalone novels, and eventually, I'll be diving into horror. Which I've come up with a horror story to where Dracula finds out that he can no longer be sustained on blood and all that. So he has to seek another way of immortality. He has to travel back to ancient Egypt.
Very, very cool. So, I'm assuming that's not part of the Iron Frost world.
No.
Yeah,
nope, not part of the Iron Frost world. But I figured I'd throw that in there as well, because I, I want to make sure that readers know that I have more in my tool belt.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely understand that. So have you written many of these books already, or are those just currently planned, like plotted out?
Well, I've written out two books in the Iron Frost universe. The one that I am currently going to have come out in April, from Noir, it's actually technically the third book I've ever written.
Okay.
So the second book I've ever written is going to come next. And then I'm working on book three, which is going to tie first two together and answer questions that the other two books couldn't answer.
Very cool. So are you a plotter then? Is that, do you generally plot out your stories ahead of time?
Yeah, I
Nice.
plot out ahead of time, and then I kind of memorize my notes, and then I just go and apply myself.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think that's awesome. As long as it's a process that works out for you, then I think that's all that
Oh,
matters.
for sure.
So talk to me a little bit about the world of Iron Frost. Is that the name of the world, or is that just, how, what is the context of
That's
Iron Frost?
the series name.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It's basically on six places on three separate continents, and the world is basically is called Dar Neminar. And with the Primnori, it takes place on Dar, and it's a world where it's a combination of Middle Ages, a little bit of spaghetti Western in a way,
Okay.
because I've got a character who's basically, when you read the descriptions, like, you're like, Clint Eastwood? And it has original magical creatures like a storm bison that whenever it breathes, it sends out clouds of rain from its nostrils. And when it gets cold, all that rain turns to snow, or maybe even hail at times. I haven't experimented with hail yet. And then there's other different kinds of magical creatures. And I try to implement into each of my stories, if I can, some autistic representation, because I'm high functioning autistic myself. And I'm learning how to put more humor into my stories. So as more Iron Frost books emerge, I'll try to be a lot more joking in certain spots. But this is one of the greatest undertakings I've done as far as writing is concerned. And the book I'm working on now, which will be book three, will be the largest of the three books. At least I'm hoping to make it that big.
Very cool. I'm sure it will turn out that way, because there's just a lot more that goes into the third book. Usually, third books end up being more. So what got you into writing? Is this something that you've always wanted to do growing up?
What I always wanted to do growing up actually was to become a history teacher.
Okay.
But then I eventually discovered writing at about 25, 26. And I discovered that through reading the A Song of Ice and Fire series. George R. R. Martin, I just love the immersion that he creates with his worlds. And so that's where I started. And now I'm at a point now where I have my own universe, to where it's devoid, it's divorced from ours, and it has its own rules and so on. And it's going to be pretty cool. Like, I actually, if there's a fourth book, it might be more dark fantasy than anything else, because I'm dropping hints in book three about it. So,
Cool. I love that. I think that's
yeah.
awesome. So, I mean, everybody has a different story when it comes to deciding when they want to write and how they got into writing. I think that's great. I'm curious to know where the inspiration came from and still comes from for this world. Is this a world that you've been building for years and years since you were younger, or did it not come until you decided to formally start writing?
Well, what inspired the world was just trying to make something that stands out from all the tropes and all the other things that we've experienced for decades and decades. So this world, specifically with Primnori, it's not one of those chosen one sort of situations. It's more along the lines of an emotional journey and discovering that you're more capable than you believe. And that's a lot of what I try to throw into my books. And that's what kind of inspired me to get into this world is to show people that no matter what has happened to you in the past and what you're experiencing now, you're more capable than you think, and you can do just so much more. And I throw in as many flaws of my characters as possible so that they have the challenges to overcome.
Yeah. All right, so you mentioned representation for autistic individuals in your books. Are the main characters, or at least some of the main characters, autistic then? Is that where that representation is coming from, or is it more like side characters?
The main character in Primnori, Anna, yeah, she is a high functioning autistic.
Cool.
I'm trying to get it into all my other main characters, but the setting isn't really calling for it. I don't know if that sounds bad or not, but it's like the second book is in a much more harsher setting and different cultures and so forth, so it won't be as prevalent. But there is like a character, because I was also diagnosed bipolar, and I have bipolar representation, so I have a bipolar character who's a secondary character in the second book. And then in the third book, I won't spoil it, but I spoil which character, but there is a character with autism as well. And I just wanted to see more of that out there in the world, because mental disorders, disabilities, however you want to phrase it, they don't discriminate. It goes into everyone's, well, not everyone's, but every individual's brain, no matter where you come from or no matter who you are, depending upon genetics. So I wanted to see more of that out there in the world.
I think that's awesome. I agree. I think it should be included. I am curious to know how you go about portraying that in a way that's understandable to someone who might be blind to that. You know, I think there's a lot of the world that see mental, I don't, but there's a lot of people that see mental challenges like that, ADHD, bipolar, you know, autism, and they think, well, that's not real, or I don't understand it, therefore I'm just going to ignore it. So how did you go about making sure that it was portrayed in an understandable way where someone would understand that's what you were doing? Because I, you know, in your world, I'm assuming autism isn't necessarily a diagnosis, because it's a different world than Earth. Is that correct?
It's more in the world that I've created. We have what are called family illnesses, and they stay within the family.
Okay.
So you can't contract anything. Like if you say you're born with Rett's, it stays in that family. So say your last name is James. That diagnosis and all that stays in the James family. Or if you're in the Clarkson family, it stays in that family and so forth. And I mean, yeah, of course you can get the common cold and stuff like that and everything, but all those neurological issues stay within the family. So with her family, with Anna's family in Primnori, it's prevalent in there. I don't identify autism in it because it didn't seem like that would be a word that put into the story,
right?
But how I show it is through sensory issues. So
yeah.
Like when she gets to Capitol, there's a bell that goes off and it bothers her. Just that sound alone bothers her, and she doesn't get certain types of sarcasm, and she over obsesses about certain things. And I kind of made it almost into an ability more than an actual disability. So I turned it into an advantage for her, because I believe that you should take people and take what makes them feel like a negative and turn it into a positive.
Yeah.
So even though she doesn't fully understand it when you start out in the story, she doesn't treat it poorly. She just wonders, how do I have this ability? Why am I the way I am? But she doesn't obsess about that. She's more into the fact that she had this accident where a dragon burned part of her face and her eye got sealed because of it. So she doesn't feel it's accepted by society. That's why when I do the elevator pitch, it's a woman scarred by a dragon fire seeking self-acceptance and the downfall of a dictator. So she's seeking self-acceptance from that. But one of the messages too, which goes along with people who are autistic, is they feel like they're the odd man or odd woman out, or and so on. I'm trying to say to people when they read this first book, people don't always notice that, and it's not always a big deal. People will take you as you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people might be ignorant, but most people will take you as you are.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool. I love the way you described that, and that makes absolute sense. Like, that fits perfectly within a fantasy setting, the way you've described family illnesses, the way you described how you're portraying. I mean, you have firsthand experience with these things, so who better to write this than you? I also think that it's just amazing how right that sounds, the way you were describing it. It's just like, yeah, that totally, I would really enjoy a story like that, you know, being someone who doesn't have autism. I would definitely love to learn more about it through a fantasy setting, because I love fantasy, right? It's
Absolutely.
just so fun to read that. So
Exactly.
for you, when it comes to the world building, what are your most favorite parts of the world building experience? You know, you talked about having these cool creatures, you talked about the setting, some being darker, some being lighter. What's your favorite part of world building?
I would say just overall physical description, because I use my eyes more than I use all my other senses.
Sure.
There's not an over amount of smell and taste and so on.
Mm-hmm.
I use more of my eyes in general from my personal experience. So I like describing the creatures. I like describing the setting. I like making sure that everybody sees as much of the finite details as possible. And that's how I go about with my world building. So when you read, you'll get more sight than you will of anything else. But the other senses are there, but sight is more dominant.
Very cool. I like that. I mean, I think that's an excellent way. How do you keep everything straight? You know, because you said you've got these different creatures that have different descriptions. How do you keep everything in order?
Notebooks.
Notebooks. Okay,
Tons of
physical
notebooks.
notebooks then.
Physical notebooks. I'm pretty old fashioned. I have a lot of physical notebooks
Cool.
and so on. And I do have file that just gives you just a summary of certain creatures and places and people and so on. But eventually what I my biggest problem though is that I eventually forget those notes exist and the stuff stays in my head. So I'm pretty good at it, as far as keeping that to memory.
Uh-huh.
So
I mean, I think that's awesome. I don't use notebooks. I have a whole stack of notebooks with one used page in each one. Because I'm ADHD, coincidentally. So
Right.
I don't keep anything organized whatsoever, but I tend to remember interesting things forever. So I'm kind of the same way. But, you know, I think it's really cool that you described how, you know, visual cues, visual descriptions make more sense to you, and you enjoy that part of putting them in there. And I think, you know, it can be a very evocative way for the reader to be drawn into the world, is by that visual description. So how do you know if it's too much, you know, when you're writing, and how do you make sure that it's not, you're not overly describing something so much that a person might get distracted by the description?
I ask myself, is this actually necessary? Does
Sure.
this serve the scene? Does this serve the story? I try not to do those big clusters of description for a character.
Mm-hmm.
I keep it a couple, like 3 or 4 sentences, and I just keep the story going. And I also take their appearance and I try to sprinkle it throughout the story so that you're not overwhelmed and bogged down. That's why I feel like, though, whether you're reading the ebook or the paperback, you're going to blaze through it. You're
Man.
going to blaze through it and so forth, because it's all sprinkled throughout instead of making you, you know, be reading 5 or 6 pages of a feast, which, I mean, people love that. But at the same time, I just feel like my brain moves too quick for that. I need faster pace, and I think people would enjoy a faster paced novel. I think people would enjoy something to where it's like they read it and they're like, okay, this is what I know about this character, and this is what I'll know later, and then I learn a bit more and a bit more and a bit more. So it's like leaving, to be cliche, breadcrumbs throughout the story. That way, they don't feel as though it's like, well, you know, this was going real well, and now I'm bogged down. But not in the case of my story, because they're now able to just sprint through it, you know, like you're on a track around a football field, you know, you're doing short sprints and so on, and jumping over hurdles, and the hurdles are usually the conflict in a story.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's an excellent way to do that. Those are the types of books I prefer as well. You know, once again, I think, like you said, there are some people that love those thick paragraphs of description that go on for pages and pages, and that's fine. You know, if you're that type of reader, excellent. I think there's also a lot of readers like you and myself who prefer the faster pace. I love the idea of just describing the character littered in among the action, the movement, because it just feels like it's more realistic to me. I've read a number of books where every time a character comes in, and there's lots of characters in these books, it not only gives a very long description of their physical, but it also talks about every little bit of clothing they're wearing in about 15 sentences.
Right.
And I'm just like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Right.
Like, give me a couple details and I'll fill in the rest with my imagination. We can move on.
Yeah.
But when you in one chapter you've met 5 different characters and each character gets a very thick description of what they're wearing, I don't care. So it's just too much.
Realistically, do you stare at a person for that long? I mean, granted, we're dealing in fiction here, but like, I don't think anyone at all stares at someone for that long, because usually if you do that, they look at you and are like, what are you staring at?
It's true.
So yeah, so it's like, you know, the only way you could do that with anyone is if you're looking at like a statue in a park. So, you know, I took it as the reader doesn't stare at a live human being for 5 to 10 minutes. So why should they have to read for however long someone's face, someone's clothes, someone's you know, if they're a orc and they're just wearing a loincloth and all, do I need to see every scale and the shades of scales and the shadows that are hitting the scales and so on? And it's like, no. Or, well, they have scales and then they have rough skin and all that. So I guess it's more like a rhinoceros sort of thing. But depending on how you write your orcs and goblins and so on. But with my story, though, actually, that's a good segue. I don't have, in the whole Iron Frost universe, orcs and goblins and so on. I have Ruto, and then I have the magical creatures. And the Ruto come in different shades and colors and different powers and so forth. And there's ones that can move things with their minds. There's one things that if they even whisper, they can destroy a city block. And then there's ones that, of course, you know, you gotta have fire. So they, you know, shoot fire from their hands.
So those are like the humanoid races. They're not humans. It's just, would you say they're called
Well,
Roy?
They're humanoid. In a sense, some of them have diamond-shaped eyes,
cool.
But that's just on one continent. And another continent, they look a little bit differently and facially and so on, but they're humanoid and so forth. But I don't have, like, what you typically see, like, in Tolkien and other places. I mean, I love Tolkien.
Yeah.
I've got 3 different versions of Lord of the Rings, but I wanted to give the reader something different. So that's why I invested more in magical creatures than anything else, because I figured we don't have enough variety. Like, I have one that I'll say it's a dragon. It's called a Crystalarden, and I took it from my like from Germanic roots and all that, as far as pronunciation is concerned. And on the front cover of Primnori, that Krista Larden is on the cover, right above Anna, the main character, shooting the bow up towards the dragon. So when your viewers see the cover, they'll see Krista Larden and so on.
That's very cool. No, I mean, I love that you decided to do that because you're right. It feels like, I think a lot of there, you'll have some set of readers who like what they know, you know, the orcs, the goblins, the very common things. It's like they feel homey in those places. But then I also think that there's a lot of readers who would appreciate the fresh perspective on things they've never seen before. I love the focus on magical creatures. I'm curious to know if, as a part of the plot, you've written in a lot of these magical creatures. Like, does Anna have like a companion creature, or are they just a big part of the plot because they're so prevalent in your stories?
Anna has her best friend in the whole world is the Storm Bison.
Nice. Okay.
His name's Cole. He's a very, very big part of it, and he actually causes a secondary character to be jealous because that secondary character is in love with Anna, and Anna seems a lot more interested in Cole because she's always felt like an isolated person, so she spends more time with him because she's a hunter, so she goes out into the woods and rides Cole, and they, you know, go out and they get deer, squirrel, or what have you. And she just sees him, that Storm Bison, as her best pal. And that actual, the dragon, the Crystal Arden, is a friend of another character in the story who is known as the Mistress of Duels and Debates. And you'll see him as a way of getting from point A to point B. Like, a lot of the magical creatures are almost like transportation more than anything else. They do have personalities, but it's like, at some point, what I'd like to do is create like a bus system that's pulled by Storm Bison, or maybe some other creature that I haven't come up with yet.
I mean, how fun, you know, you've got these great ideas, and you have the option of, hey, either I can just come up with this new magical creature, or use, you know, I just love that you're including that in the plot, and that's part of it. Because there's a difference when someone, as a part of their world building, they have all these cool elements, they have these cool creatures, but they're only mentioned offhand. I love to see when they're incorporated into it. You know, they're brought into it on account of their unique abilities or just their unique characteristics, and how that affects the main characters and side characters in the world. So that's so cool. That's so fun.
Oh, yeah.
So how detailed do you get in your planning of these elements? Do you have like anything that you just write off the cuff by the seat of your pants, or have you planned most of these things specifically beforehand?
The events are planned.
The
actual actions are not planned. They're off the cuff.
Okay.
Like, you know, if I say all these things need accomplished in this chapter, well, that those exist, but those are kind of like stepping stones to just pantsing it, to just freestyling it, because once I stand on that one step stone, I take off from there.
Cool. I mean, I
yeah.
think that's so fun. What a great process for writing.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy editing? Is that something you like doing?
Editing is not so bad. I'm glad right now that I've been able to just do regular writing, because it feels like I've actually been editing the first two books that are coming out this year nonstop. Like, I feel like I haven't written anything new, so I haven't had to touch those because they're with the publisher, and I've been just working on the new book. And I was recently, and I have to talk to them a bit more, but I recently signed with Altered Reality magazine, which is like it's fantasy and other sorts of genres and so forth, but it's an online magazine. And I sent them in my first story, Frost Lily, which takes place in the Iron Frost universe. But that is almost, it's like a prequel in a way to the next book. But not in the sense prequel as in like setting up the next book, more along the lines of it just gives you more of a character that didn't get her time to shine in that next book. I mean, she gets time to shine, but it's not like you don't know that much about her other than she's a secondary character. So,
okay.
So I wanted to give her more.
How very cool, though, that you have these. I love being able to branch off and have these side stories. And it sounds like you've created a lot of opportunity for that because you've created this rich world. And do you anticipate writing any short stories or anything that you might give away for free as like a drawing to your story?
Ross Lily, part one, is on my newsletter, and
yes.
it's also on my blog. That's hwjohnston.blogspot.com. And it's also going to be, of course, the part one is going to be in with the magazine, which that one's a little bit more modified compared to the other ones and the other platforms that you can go from. But I have another short story in the works called Dance for Existence. And basically, it's the creation myth part of the Iron Frost world, to where the five women that basically, you know, they dance the world into existence. They, you know, there's conflict between them, and certain things happen, and it leads to bigger and greater conflict, which is like kind of the sole reference, historical reference, that's pulled from for book two. And then I have another one for how I think it's what do they call it? I call it Jaguars to Owls, to where these deities go from being jaguars to owls, and it's a kind of a history of a specific race in my Iron Frost universe, you know, and describes how the royalty didn't like this and didn't like that, and all inner conflict between them. So there's a lot to branch out with. It's just a matter of time, coffee, and patience.
Yes, those are great descriptions. Do you do this full time then? Is this what you're doing full time, or do you have a job as well that you're?
I wish I really, really do, because then it'll give me more time. I work at a school as a custodian, so
oh,
I
nice.
Clean up after elementary school kids and keep their classrooms nice and neat and so forth for them to use the next day. And
Great.
That's a pretty
Yeah.
decent job. And it's in the school district that I graduated from.
Oh, cool.
So,
are there still teachers there that you had when you went there? Or?
Yeah, they
Okay,
haven't
cool.
aged at all. I don't know what they're drinking.
There's something about elementary school teachers, though. That's a real thing. Something I haven't been back to my elementary school in some time, but I went after I graduated 15 years. And I swear they look the same. It's like, what the? That's crazy.
Yeah, I graduated in 08. Like, what happened? Were you? Is it the faculty room coffee? Is it this? Has this the faculty room coffee had the secret to eternal youth?
I mean,
I mean,
it
I have
must be
there's a
something.
history teacher I saw there that I had in middle school, and I'm like, what? Where's there should be more gray, like, and you're still built the same,
Right.
and you're still moving fast, and you're still funny as the Dickens. I mean, you know, nothing's changed. It's great. It's wonderful. But it's like, wow.
It's the secrets. I don't know. This must be the secrets of being a teacher. I'm not a teacher myself either, but I recognize that what you have recognized. So yeah, I mean, that's the challenge of having these really cool, complex worlds, doing this world building on the side, right? We've got a full-time job. I'm sure you have other responsibilities that, you know, I myself have other responsibilities. So how do you make the time to properly imagine things? You know, how do you find the space to imagine this world in a way for you to keep world building it?
Think about it all the time. I never stop thinking about it. I'm single. I don't have any children. I hope to have some in the future, but I don't have, like, I live completely and utterly alone. So I have a house all to myself. I have all that open space to think and think and think. And then when I go to work, because you're a custodian, No one bothers you.
Yeah,
No
that's
one, no one talks to you. You're scrubbing a toilet. You're sweeping a floor, whatever it is. No one bothers you, so you have all the time in the world. So, I do all my, a lot of thinking at work. I do a lot of thinking home. I put into practice. I was always taught to make time, and if you're serious enough about it, that you'll do it. I once went to a Comic-Con and met the guy who played the mailman, Cliff from Cheers. And I originally wanted to be a voice actor, and we found out that, well, I wasn't very serious about it, and that stuck with me. And so that actually was one of the things that got me into writing, was I wanted to be serious about something and so forth. Will I ever see him again? I don't know. But if I do, I'm gonna say, hey, I finally got serious, and then here's a book.
I mean, that's so cool, though. I love that you love the way you describe that, though, because there's a lot in the world, there's a lot to do, and it's easy to complain that we don't have enough time to do the things we want to do. But the way you just said it, if you're serious about something, if you really love and want to do something, then you fit the time in, whatever works for you. I mean, that looks so different for everybody, but the fact that you are thinking about your story all the time, I can relate. You get sucked into this world and it's just on your mind, but that's good. That allows you to, when you get to the actual writing sessions, you've thought about it. So it's easier to get into it.
And it throws you into certain topics that you didn't think you really wanted to throw into your stories. Like, do I need plumbing? Do I need a system of levees? Is that necessary to the story? Will the characters at some point go past a dam? And interact with the dam, and then a levee breaks, and so forth. My world that I created, I kept it simple. There's only so many mountains, there's only so many rivers, there's only so many streams. The original character, the original map for book two, there's not gonna be a map in my books, unfortunately, unless that maybe there's like a later edition. Hopefully I can get later editions where I can put maps in them. But the map for book two would have looked like a giant elephant head. And I would its ears would be an archipelago of islands and so forth. So
Very cool. Well, hopefully you can get a map someday. Those are
what?
fun. I know some authors make them themselves. Some authors commission, they work with other people to make them, but I do enjoy maps. I don't spend a lot of time inspecting them, but I think they're cool to have at the beginning of books. So, well, awesome. There's so much that we could dive into and discuss, but we are running a little bit short on time. So before we get going, where can people find more information about you and your upcoming books?
Well, you can go to author Andrew Johnston .wixsite.com. And you can also go to, well, I'm on Facebook at Andrew Johnston, and I'm on Twitter at HW Johnston 7. And I'm also on TikTok at HW John. I also, like I said, I have a blog that it's HW Johnston .blogspot.com. And if you're in southwestern Pennsylvania, I don't generally leave the county. I'm sure you'll find me easily. So,
Yeah, well, I think that's great. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been an excellent conversation.
thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. Talking to Andrew was, just delightful in all, but I learned a lot about having the right perspective and organizing your thoughts and being really creative in the way that you build this world, knowing that readers can and will appreciate what you've written. Maybe not every reader in the world, but specific subsets of readers, and those are the people you want to impress and delight with your writing. So next week we'll be talking to Amber Toro about successful Kickstarter launches of your books. So Amber actually used Kickstarter recently to launch her first book, her debut novel. She talks about her experience, she talks about the things she learns, and has some advice for people who might be interested in doing Kickstarters themselves for their first book. Kickstarter is something that I would love to do someday if I can actually buckle down and put a campaign together. But I think you'll really enjoy that conversation next week. Of course, if you'd like to join me on the podcast, just head to thecasualauthor.com and fill out the form there. If you know of any other authors, anybody connected to authoring and writing, you know, cover designers, lawyers, however you might be, editors, you may be related to authoring. We'd love to chat with you. So just head there and let me know. And I'd love to have you. If you have any questions, you can email me at dan@thecasualauthor.com. Would love to respond. And I'd love to have conversations with you. I'm trying to get a little bit back into social media. So loosely, I'm not going to do anything crazy quite yet, but you may see me around a little bit more where I was absent before. But thank you again for listening, and I look forward to talking to you next week.